This is ESPN Radio.
Hour number three here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline, and it was getting sweaty around here during the breaks. We were reliving the glory days here. The glory days look a lot better for Chris Canty, but just remembering the differences personality-wise on this show, I being a former offensive lineman, Chris Canty, former longtime NFL defensive lineman here, and like it's just the little areas in conversation where the differences in mentality between the two position groups tend to show up so much, Chris. Like looking back on games and all these spots, like defensive linemen have this beautiful confidence that I really admire in you guys. Like, if you can lose the game and still go out there and it's like, hey, man, if I had two sacks and a few tackles for loss here, I'm good, man. We're still going to eat.
Oh, yeah. There's just a difference culturally between the two position groups, right? Like, offensive linemen, they have a certain code, and defensive linemen have a certain code. Like, for defensive linemen, the best is when you win and you actually ball individually. Like, if your team gets the dub and you go out there, you have a couple of sacks, a forced fumble, that kind of thing, then that's ultimately the best thing. But for a defensive lineman, like the next best thing is actually going out there and individually balling and your team losing the game. Like, like that's the next best thing. And for offensive linemen, you can't make that claim, right? Because no matter how many pancake blocks you have, no matter how many pluses you have on the grade sheet, if your team loses, it sucks because you don't have those individual sacks to be able to sell to your team in terms of, you know, quantifying your impact on your squad winning games. With defensive linemen, we actually have that. So, yeah, there are some differences in the difference the culture of the position groups, and I think we see that sometimes play out in terms of how we look at things through our football lenses.
Yeah, you can always tell it in the media guide. They'll list the stats for defensive linemen here. This is how many tackles for loss this guy had. The offensive line, it's just the stats of the running back and the quarterback.
He paved
the way for a 1,000-yard rusher and a 2,000-yard passer here because we've got nothing. But we do have right now on the Goodyear Hotline, Tyler Foljam, our ESPN sports betting analyst, the proud owner of many pancake blocks and the co-host of Game Night Sundays on ESPN Radio. And Tyler, as we look, we're halfway through the NFL season now here. The year of the underdog has been pretty prominent right now. Underdogs 75-57-1 against the spread this season. How surprising has this been?
I guess pretty surprising. Even this last week, I mean, I think only four favorites won on Sunday in the NFL, and you had five teams that were, I believe, touchdown or more favorites lose outright. The Rams 7.5-point favorites on Sunday night. They lost. The Saints got up to about 7-point favorites on Atlanta and some shops they lost. And of course, the super big upsets of the Dallas Cowboys is 10-point favorites at home, falling to the Broncos and the Jaguars as 14.5-point underdogs beating the Buffalo Bills. So yesterday was kind of like the most kind of pure expression of this underdog wave that we've been riding in this NFL season, because that was absolutely wacky. The Joe Public took an absolute beating. The books out here, I'm looking across the way. I'm sitting here at the ESPN studios at the Link, looking at Caesar's Palace, this massive, massive estate. And they built that because of weeks like we just saw in the NFL on Sunday.
Tyler, speaking of odds, I mean, the one thing that we have to look at is the MVP odds and how they were affected in week nine. Entering this week's slate, Josh Allen was the favorite at 3-1, and his team lost to the Jaguars, and he didn't play too well, throwing two picks, no touchdowns. Kyler Murray was 5-1, and he didn't play because of an injury. Tom Brady was plus 550, but they had the bye week. Matt Stafford, 6-1, and they lost to the Titans. Very underwhelming performance by him. Dak Prescott, plus 750. They end up getting embarrassed at home to the Denver Broncos, and then Aaron Rodgers, 9-1. And he didn't play because of COVID. So we have to ask ourselves, is this like Lamar Jackson's award to lose at this point based on what he's done this season and what he did yesterday?
Well, I think there's a very good case for Lamar being the front runner, but at Caesars William Hill, the favorite now on the bye week, Tom Brady moving all the way up to the overwhelming favorite. And that's just, again, the nature of yesterday's carnage in the National Football League. I did come across a stat, though. Before Sunday night's game between the Titans and the Rams, in the next-gen stats era, that's since 2016, the quarterback has who has produced the most EPA, expected points added, cumulative grade there. You add your EPA for each game. Whoever had the highest cumulative EPA at the quarterback position has won the MVP each of those seasons in the next-gen stats era going back to 2016. And going into Sunday's action, Matt Stafford was first in the NFL with a 112 EPA, and the next closest quarterback was Dak Prescott with a 60-something EPA. So Stafford, despite his terrible effort and those two awful interceptions, still the leader in EPA in the NFL by a considerable margin this season, and that's been a very predictive stat as to MVP winner. When you look at the Rams, their two losses have come against arguably the best team in the NFC, the 8-1 Cardinals, and arguably the best team in the AFC, the Titans, who have just two losses. So I think Stafford, by the numbers, would say he's still the MVP, but this is not just a numbers award, it's also a narrative award. And the fact that recency bias is affecting Kyler Murray, his team winning without him, Dak Prescott, Josh Allen, Matt Stafford, awful, poor performances, like floor performances for their season. And Tom Brady not playing at all, he gets shot up the board there. Though I do think from an eye point perspective, Lamar Jackson, if you take him off the Baltimore Ravens, what are they? I mean, their defense is not that good this year, and that's because of injury. That's a legitimate excuse, but the fact of the matter is I think Lamar does more for his team than Tom Brady does for his team, than Matt Stafford does for his team, than Josh Allen does for his team. If you take Lamar off the Ravens, I'm not sure they have more than one or two wins this season because he's their best running back and one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League.
Canty and Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Talking to Tyler Folgermar, ESPN sports betting analyst. And Tyler, one of the names you mentioned in that, Dak Prescott, quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys, who took that big L this weekend to Denver. Why did you come on here last week and tell us that they were a must bet for the rest of this season?
Well, they were undefeated against the spread. 10 was a big number, so I think most sharps would say in any given NFL game, as long as the starting quarterback, especially one like Teddy Bridgewater, who has been so good ATS, on the road as an underdog, that's just too much to give in an NFL game. So I was playing them as a 6-point teaser, getting it down past the key numbers of seven or six, because I thought they'd win that game by a possession, but they absolutely got punched in the mouth. Denver ran all over them. They made Dak as inefficient as he's been all season long, maybe in the last 2 years, dating back to 2019. So I apologize for that. I guess I'm the Cowboys curse, but I hate Cowboys fans because of their obnoxious nature. So I'm glad they took an L, although I can't really sit here and gloat because my team looked just as awful in getting the brakes beat off of them by the Tennessee Titans, my LA Rams. So it was a really bad week for a lot of the good teams in the NFL.
Tyler, I do feel bad. We kind of bullied you into the Cowboys thing. You were trying to help us out on that. We pushed you into that last week on this show. And so we will wear our portion of this, Chris, and what we've done to Tyler with the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, it's only right that we do that. But Tyler, before we let you out of here, man, Steelers are a touchdown favorite at home against the Bears. How do you see this one playing out tonight?
Yeah, this is another one where, again, 7 points on the road is a lot to give for a team that seems, and I'm using air quotes, as mediocre as the Steelers have been this season. But I really think this is a difficult spot for the Chicago Bears. We know their offense has been amongst the worst, if not the worst, in the NFL. They're dead last in yards per play, dead last in passing yards per game, and dead last in points per game. And that weakness matches up perfectly with the strength of the Pittsburgh Steelers, which is TJ Watt, Cam Hayward, and that defense, especially at home with the added benefit of crowd noise to rattle a rookie quarterback. Mike Tomlin and his career guys, 22-4 straight up against rookie quarterbacks, and only two of those losses came when Ben Roethlisberger was healthy enough to start for Mike Tomlin. So he's 22-2 against rookie QBs with Roethlisberger as a starter. I know Ben is not what he once was, but TJ Watt and Cam Hayward are in the prime of their career. That defense is getting better throughout the season. And I just think this is an awful spot for the Chicago Bears. So I would say you can lay the 7. If you're not comfortable with that, 6-point two-leg teaser, tease the Steelers down to -1, and tease the total to 46 and play that under. So you're getting a little extra in terms of a little extra cushion in terms of the Steelers only needing to win the game by 2. And if the game goes is a little bit more offensive than we think it might be, especially on the Steelers side, because there's no Khalil Mack for the Bears, then you get those 6 extra points to play the under 46, because I can't see Fields in that Bears offense, you know, having a spike game, having a ceiling game in this particular environment. That would be a 1 or 2% probability. So I like the Steelers. If you can't stomach laying the 7, Two-leg, six-point teaser. Steelers down to a one-point favorite. Total up to 46 and play that under.
Tyler Foljam handing out money on the program with us today. And worth noting, like you said, for the Bears, Matt Nagy back on the sideline. So we know what that means.
Another ding in the armor for another positive bullet point for Pittsburgh.
Exactly. It's all coming up Steelers in this one here. Tyler, we appreciate the time as always, man. We'll talk to you next week and not try and bully you about the Cowboys anymore.
Sounds good, guys.
Awesome stuff from Tyler at Tyler_Foljam on Twitter is where you can get more great advice like that. Coming up next, though, the biggest narrative game of the weekend gave us a very interesting answer. We'll tell you what that was next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
As we are at the NFL's halfway mark, take some time to revisit some of the potential end-of-season awards, MVP, Offensive Player of the Year. But coming up in about 10 minutes, Mina Kimes is going to join us here on Canty and Golic Jr. She thinks there is a very easy answer when it comes to the NFL's Defensive Player of the Year. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty were presented by Progressive Insurance. And Chris, I feel like we also got a pretty easy answer that we can now accept about the Cleveland Browns and Odell Beckham Jr., right? They get a 41-16 win over the Bengals. They have officially, according to Adam Schefter, waived Odell Beckham Jr. this afternoon. A new team will be eligible to pick up him and the remaining $7.5 million on this year's contract. But we clearly saw, maybe not this weekend with what happened on Spielman specifically, but over time enough to tell us that these two sides are better apart and that the Browns right now are still very much a team with the Super Bowl on its mind this season.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, the Browns have a losing record with Odell in the lineup, and we know that this team is capable from a talent standpoint of being a playoff contender. So, yeah, there's a little bit of a disconnect in terms of what they are when Beckham is actually in the lineup on the field with them as opposed to when he's out. And we saw the best of what that Cleveland Browns offense and that team can be on Sunday against the division opponent in the Bengals in a gotta-have-it situation. I mean, them being able to run the ball the way that they did, Nick Chubb and that ground-and-pound attack, and then Baker Mayfield being able to pick and choose his opportunities for explosives in the passing game and going over the top. I think that's exactly what Kevin Stefanski would want in terms of the balance, the mix that he's looking for, run to pass. This was always going to be a team. This was always going to be an offense that was led by the run game. That's going to be the engine for what they do. And not having the pressure of having Odell out there on the field allows Kevin Stefanski to call the plays, to sequence the plays the way that he wants, and it allows Baker Mayfield to play free and easy. And that's the Baker that I saw yesterday on the field. He was accurate in throwing the ball down the field, pushing the ball down the field. The one that he threw to Donovan Peoples-Jones, 60-yard bomb, he put it right there on him. Like, I hadn't seen that version of Baker Mayfield with any consistency this season, and I don't think it's a coincidence that now that they've officially moved on from Odell Beckham Jr., that's the guy that we're seeing now.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing when you look at the nature of offenses and how a lot of different ones operate. You've heard a lot of people bring up the fact that the Browns are a timing and rhythm offense with Kevin Stefanski, meaning it's not necessarily going to rely on one player being able to get open and go do his thing. Like, Chris, I remember hearing Mark Sanchez talk about this when you look at Steve Sarkisian, who's the head coach at Texas now, but was the OC at USC for all those great years, was the OC at Alabama last year. And the way he operates on his play card, he's got a handful of plays for the best playmakers on the team. So that at any point, it's like, all right, I got to get this guy going. I got to get him the plays that are going to get this dude the ball. That's not how this Browns offense has ever operated. And that's been the disconnect in a lot of ways, I think, with Odell Beckham Jr. here. That's also going to make it really interesting now for what happens next with Odell. Like, Chris, as you look out there, we're hearing a bunch of different things about where Odell might wind up next year and what influence he might have on that. Chris Mortensen, our ESPN NFL insider, was on Bart and Hahn earlier and offered up this as a suggestion. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. What are your thoughts on that, Chris? Odell and the Patriots, potentially.
Nah, I don't see it happening, man. I mean, listen, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but the last two quarterbacks that Odell Beckham Jr. played with didn't necessarily go well with the relationship, right? I mean, he threw Eli Manning under the bus at the end of his tenure with the New York Giants. It felt like he threw Baker Mayfield under the bus, you know, through his father in the Instagram post. So I don't know if that's necessarily something I want to introduce to my locker room when I'm trying to develop a young quarterback in Mac Jones. So I don't necessarily see the Patriots as a fit, man. I look around the landscape of the teams in the NFL that would be in the market for a guy like that, teams that can be creative with the cap space that they do have to fit a contract like it would take to land Odell. In two places that I come up with, Seattle and Kansas City. Both of those teams have needs at the wide receiver spot. We know Seattle has been one of the teams that have been rumored connected to Odell. Their organization has been trying to get Russell Wilson all the help they possibly can for the entire year, whether it's offensive coordinator, whether it's offensive line help. It just seems like that would make a lot of sense. And then with the Kansas City Chiefs, I mean, you've got a strong head coach in Andy Reid. You've got an established quarterback in Patrick Mahomes. And, oh, by the way, this is a team that also is looking for that receiver that can play opposite of Tyreek Hill in that Sammy Watkins role. They haven't necessarily found that piece yet. They wanted Josh Gordon to be that guy. Turns out he's not. So it seems like Odell would be a fit there as well. And, oh, by the way, both of those teams are just desperate enough to make a decision like that and take a chance on a player as mercurial as Beckham, because right now, if the playoffs started today, both of those teams would be on the outside looking in. They're both in the cellars of their respective divisions. So it feels like the need and the urgency match up, as well as the fit with the on-the-field X's and O's with those two landing spots.
Yeah, I've seen the Seahawks getting a lot of traction, and we know Russell Wilson just put out his I'm Back video of him Succession style working through his rehab, which I know Chris Canty loves here. Odo, hey, I feel like Russell Wilson is now starting to rival Carson Wentz for your favorite quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, I love Russ, but he can be a cornball sometimes, and this video just reminds you of how corny he can be.
Yeah.
Like, I just feel like there should have been a little bit more of a filter in his camp. Like, this is one of those where you just hope Sierra would hold back the reins a little bit on Russ pulling the trigger to put that video out. I know he thinks he's cool with the Succession music. Bro, it's not cool. It really isn't. Just get back out on the football field and do what you do best, which is throw bombs on the football field for touchdowns.
And that's part of this. Coming up next, I want to get to, with Russell Wilson back on the field, but still looking at this Seahawks team and the potential fit with Odell Beckham Jr., my biggest concern from Odell Beckham Jr.'s side with joining the Seattle Seahawks, and if Mina Kimes agrees with me. We'll get to that after this word from Indeed. Now, we get it. It's your business, and you want to be involved in all the decisions, especially who to hire. Then you need Indeed, the all-in-one hiring platform that makes it easy to attract, screen, and interview candidates all in one place. With smart tools like Instant Match, you instantly get a list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your job description the minute you sponsor a job. So spend less time sifting through resumes and more time saying you're hired. Visit Indeed.com/credit. Odell Beckham Jr. to Seattle. Does the fit fit? Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. Lots of talk about the Browns. Better without Odell Beckham Jr. All of these different things. And what his future looks like. For more on that, we go to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to Mina Kimes, ESPN NFL analyst and host of The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, wherever you get your podcasts. And Mina, a lot of people looking at Odell Beckham Jr. finally waived by the Browns today and saying the Seattle Seahawks seem like a fit here. From Odell's perspective, how risky do you think it is going to join a Seahawks offense that Pete Carroll could at any time turtle and just to ground and pound like he always does?
Well, it's been a great radio hit. I've seen the jokes about whether Odell can run block. Look, you know, it's hard to tell fit-wise from OBJ's point of view. It really comes down to what he wants. Obviously, financially, it factors into it, because if he does clear waivers, you know, he'll get to kind of call his shot. And then in terms of, like, okay, is he okay not being the primary target? Because if he's in an offense with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, you'd assume would probably play more from the slot, he's not number one target. And yeah, that's really up to Odell. From Seattle's point of view, again, finances matter. They do have cap space this year. They could use that money to work on an extension like Quandre Diggs or something like that. But to me, there's no reason not to get better on offense. I know there's questions about the defense and some of the holes there, but it's not going to fix itself. So I feel like, you know, for a Seahawks team that's kind of on the outside looking in right now as it pertains to the playoffs, it makes a ton of sense. I'm not sure they'll do it, candidly, but it's a team that's taken big swings before on free agents and trades, so it certainly has the potential to happen.
Mina, looking at the Brown side of the OBJ drama, I mean, in a gotta-have-it spot for a lot of different reasons, the team came up with a big win and added some style points to it. Should we read anything into that game yesterday, that win that they had against the Bengals?
You know, to me, it's interesting because obviously with OBJ leaving, there's a big storyline, oh, the offense and how they look. But I was actually just kind of impressed by the whole team. Like, it felt like a really complete performance. I thought the Browns were dominant in the trenches on both sides of the football, which, of course, had nothing to do with Beckham. I was particularly impressed by the defense because, you know, that they've been so up and down, in particular, you know, the secondary, which was a big focus during the offseason. And I thought they pitched a heck of a game versus Joe Burrow. You know, Myles Garrett, who I mentioned earlier today, I thought should be the favorite for Defensive Player of the Year, continues to just be an absolute nightmare for opposing quarterbacks. And if they can play the style of football we saw against Cincinnati, which is, of course, the dominant run game, coupled with some shot plays, and then a pass defense that's improved and makes plays like Denzel Ward did, they can absolutely compete in the AFC.
The AFC is certainly a crowded and jumbled picture in a lot of ways. The NFC, Mina, we thought was a lot clearer, and that all changed yesterday. One of the teams involved with that, the Dallas Cowboys, getting thumped by the Broncos. What looked different about that Cowboys offense to you yesterday?
Oh, it was just a total meltdown in every way. I mean, Dak Prescott, you know, I say that, I'm like not even trying to be funny. Like, it just really was. You can't really pin one thing. Nothing was working. Like, Dak played one of the worst games I've ever seen him play. You know, Denver played a really, really good game on defense. I don't think that should be overlooked, but the wide receivers were dropping footballs. They weren't running the ball with success. Denver was pretty committed to stopping the run. You know, to me, I think Dallas offense bounces back. I think this is kind of like a blip. Obviously, Dak's coming off an injury. My bigger concern is the Cowboys' defense, which is vastly improved, but has benefited a lot from takeaways and has been sort of inconsistent against the run. And yesterday, Marcus Spears got mad at me for saying it this way, but they got dump trucked.
Mm. Yeah, that was ugly yesterday. I mean, it was 30 to nothing with 5 minutes to go. So I don't know how you explain that one if you're Mike McCarthy or Dak Prescott. I think you just got to flush that. But Mina, at the risk of sounding like a prisoner in the moment, do we have to start talking about the Tennessee Titans as Super Bowl contenders, like legit Super Bowl contenders?
I think we do. I don't know if I'd feel the same way if they were in the NFC. It's just speaking totally honestly. The AFC is just so confusing. And we're coming off of a weekend where Buffalo lost to Jacksonville. So I don't know how you could argue that a team like Tennessee can't come out of this conference. You know, I think it was interesting. The offense, the whole week we spent asking, well, what's this offense going to look like with Derrick Henry? And frankly, it wasn't really an issue in this game because they got ahead so quickly with the Stafford interceptions. But this is a right now the Titans, I don't think they have one of the best defenses in the NFL top to bottom, but I do think they have one of, if not the best, four-man rushes. And you guys know, like, if you can get pressure in the NFL without blitzing right now against some of these mobile quarterbacks, you can win.
Oh, yeah, won a Super Bowl like that, man. You ain't got to tell me.
Hey,
I know all about that.
There we go. There's the flex I was looking for here. Canty and Golic Jr. talking to Mina Kimes, Super Bowl champion Chris Canty and Mike Golic Jr. Mina, looking and talking on that respect, I want to flip back to the NFC one more time. You, like many, have been a fan of Kyle Shanahan, his play calling, how innovative he has been on that side of the football, but a shocking loss to a Kyler Murray-less Arizona Cardinals team. Is the seat finally going to start to heat up for Kyle despite that Super Bowl appearance in 2019?
I think so. I mean, look, it's halfway through the season. There's a lot of games left. But I would say if they play like they did on Sunday, and that goes to the execution, the play calling, the decision-making, which is what really puzzled me, the punt down you know, multiple scores with not a lot of time left in the game. Yeah, I think if that continues, absolutely. And I'm a massive Shanahan defender. Just as a play caller, I absolutely love what he brings to the game. But that's just not tenable, frankly. And it was kind of shocking, not for a number of reasons, but I just never seen that Niners team look so unprepared during his tenure as head coach. So they got to really change things up. I'll be curious to see. I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo is at all the reason why they lost, but I'll be curious to see if they make a change sometime in the coming weeks to Trey Lance, just because at some point you got to kind of look in the mirror as the Niners team and recognize you're not competing for the playoffs.
It's a very different reality than when we thought we'd come into this season with. But you're right, the future got to start at some point soon, because that clock started ticking as soon as they drafted him. Check out Mina Kimes every day, 4 o'clock Eastern on NFL Live. Download, subscribe, and rate and review the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny wherever you get your podcasts. Mina, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, friend.
Thanks.
Canty and Golic Jr. is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. Proud to serve members of the Armed Forces, DOD, veterans, and their families. Our members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Coming up next, though, we talked about that chaotic mess that is the AFC. Is there one team, not named the Tennessee Titans, that we need to start thinking about more and more as not only playoff contenders, but potential division winners? Next on ESPN Radio. Something or nothing. A lot of NFL teams spit the bit this weekend in pole position in their divisions. We'll try and figure out who's got a blip on the radar and who's got real problems heading down the back half of the NFL season. Coming up in about 10 minutes here on Canty and Golic Jr., Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, we are presented by Progressive Insurance. But Chris, we brought it up a little earlier in the show. The NFC had some big blows dealt at the top this weekend, but the AFC felt the heat big time. The Buffalo Bills were like the one team we felt like we could trust, and they handed the Jacksonville Jaguars their first win on U.S. soil this season. Chris, that's not a mark that feels comfortable saying out loud. Like, I'm not going to hold that defense to much of a fault. When you hold the other team to 9 points, you're supposed to win the damn football game.
Yeah, when I hold you to single digits, I've done my job as a defensive player. Like, that's just what it is. But the Bills' offense didn't come to the party yesterday for whatever reason. Buffalo just doesn't play well when they go to Jacksonville. And yesterday, Josh Allen had an off day, and his team couldn't afford for him to put them in that kind of position with the amount of turnovers that he had, just because we know how important Josh Allen is to that Buffalo team. Like, that offense is him. Like, he is the best runner that they have. He's also one of the best throwers of the football in the National Football League. For him to account for 3 turnovers, that's just not good for business. So I think ultimately that's what it came down to, Josh Allen playing one of his worst games of the season, and a Jacksonville Jaguars team that hung around just long enough to believe that they could actually win that football game, and they found a way to get it done.
Yeah, we know that Jags offense is going to be a work in progress with Trevor Lawrence. We saw him get knocked out for a little bit, and C.J. Beathard had to go in, his backup, who, that's a reminder, C.J. Beathard is in Jacksonville, if anyone wasn't up to date on that one. But, Chris, for the Bills offense, the struggle, and I think the problems start to look pretty similar to what we've seen in Kansas City, right? You were down 2 starters on the offensive line, which is noteworthy, but this is a team that's had a difficult time managing any semblance of balance. And the NFL is kind of making that same switch college football made in the Big 12 a few years ago, where we had all these high-flying offenses, we had these quarterbacks with live arms and targets like Tyreek Hill, like Stephon Diggs, and everyone's decided to play back and said, no, you're going to figure out a different way to beat us. And when you've got red zone performances like Buffalo mustered up in this game, like we've seen from Kansas City, life gets awful hard when you can't just move people up front the way a lot of the premier teams in the NFL right now can.
No question about it. When you get down in the red area, it's a condensed space, so there's less ground for the secondary to cover. And all of a sudden, there are a lot more eyeballs on your quarterback than there ordinarily would be out in the field. So you're absolutely right about that. But what makes life a lot harder to win on the road, if you're the Buffalo Bills, is 12 penalties for 118 yards. Like, that's something that you can't afford to do either. And that's usually not something that we see from a Sean McDermott coach team, but that's what they were yesterday. It felt like one of those games where they were just going to roll their helmet out there and they expect to win because the Jacksonville Jaguars give up wins like it's going out of style. But it just so happens that on this particular day, the Jags were able to catch them slipping. Their defense played well enough. Josh Allen, the edge rusher, along with Tavin Bryan, who had multiple sacks, like, those guys came to play. They disrupted Josh Allen just enough to be able to get it done. So you give credit where credit is due, but that game is much more about the Buffalo Bills not showing up ready to play than it is about the Jacksonville Jaguars doing anything to disrupt them.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Here's Josh Allen talking about his performance and their team's effort against Jacksonville this weekend. And, Chris, Josh Allen has been the story of the NFL the last few years for his steady progression, his rise, becoming a better completion percentage quarterback here, hitting on more of the big plays and eliminating some of those disaster galaxy brain plays we used to see from Josh. Feel like we've seen lately a little bit more hot and cold in his game here, and it manifests in those red zone numbers that we were talking about, because while they're scoring on a second best in the league, 97% in the red zone between touchdowns and field goals, when it comes to actually crossing the goal line, they're 19th in red zone touchdown efficiency so far this season. And when you've got a side of the NFL that the AFC is that's been as chaotic as it is so far, and you're failing to capitalize on that, your defense is only going to be able to hang on for so long, like we saw this past weekend, and that could be an issue. I still think this is the best team in the AFC if you're asking me to put my money on one over the long term of this season. But Tennessee is going to make us think about this more and more down the stretch if they keep putting pressure on opposing quarterbacks in a way that we saw bother this Bills team.
I will say this. I'll also throw the Baltimore Ravens, my Baltimore Ravens, in the mix for best teams in the AFC too, because they proved something to me yesterday. Another come-from-behind win for Lamar Jackson. Down 14 points twice in that ball game, pushed it to overtime, found a way to overcome a turnover in overtime in order to position Justin Tucker for the game-winning field goal. Like, that's a team that's going to have something to say about how the AFC shakes out as we go down the stretch as well. But again, when you're trying to forecast or project what these teams are going to be moving forward, the fact that the Buffalo Bills are so one-dimensional on the offensive side of the ball and that they can't move people, that they can't consistently run the football, that has to be a big concern, man. When the weather changes, when we get to late November, December, and we start talking about playoff-style football, you got to be able to run the ball. And I'm not just talking about with your quarterback, Josh Allen. I'm talking about with your running backs, conventional sets, and conventional run game. And the Buffalo Bills haven't proven that they can consistently do that. So that's the one thing that I thought that this team built on from last season to the first half, through the first half of this year. But it's starting to show up the last couple of weeks that they can't consistently do that. And that's a huge concern for me. So that's why it's hard for me to have confidence that this is going to be the team representing the AFC in the Super Bowl. And we know that this season, the Buffalo Bills had title aspirations. So that's the lens that we have to view them through. I'm not quite sold on them yet because they don't have that aspect of their team down pat just yet with the run game.
What? How big was the imbalance this weekend? The Bills went design pass on 84.6% of their plays in the loss to the Jags. It's the highest design play percentage in any game, including the playoffs, where neither team scored 10 points since we started tracking design plays in 2006. So more balance needs to come up. But coming up next, the Bills weren't the only team near the top in the NFL to suffer a blowback here. We talked about some of their issues. Coming up next, we will look at some of the division leaders that went down this weekend and try and decide if these are blips on the radar or trends to monitor next.